Because I want to tell you, the way you lined them dominoes up, when I hit the first one, I knocked every one of them motherfuckers down. Now, who wants to dance? I loved it. You see Hell's Angels go, uh-oh. This guy's loony. Look at that little guy, and he's challenging all of us? What's he got? And I opened my coat, and I'd have a banana with a condom on it. And they'd all go, ah, and run away. Hey, any guy that will walk into a black gang in their own place, in the hood, pull out two bananas with condoms on them and say, all right, you motherfuckers, which one of you beat up my son? And they go, who's your son? And I go, you know, it's up there in the sky. Big bright thing comes up every morning. And they go, oh, this guy's fucking crazy. Get out of here. We're not going to shoot this guy. Of course, if they do, I'm also bulletproof. I wear a Kevlar suit when I go out, right? I used to own a security company, so I had all this great stuff left over. Great Kevlar suit, just like the diplomats wear. Point-blank range, 44 mag, bounce right off. However, it will knock your ass over, right? It's not like you don't feel anything. It'll knock you out. But it's that thing when you're laying down there and they go, shot that motherfucker dead, and you sit up and you go, well, I've been dead for many years, though. You thought the Trang, those vampire things, were just stories? Not really. You want to know about the living dead? Go to Hollywood. Drive down the street at night. Listen to the people talk in the cafes in Melrose. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, I'm not really a waiter. I'm an actor. And I go, so this is a movie? Okay. Well, let me give you the script. Get my food. Why fuck around? You don't need to make placebos. God makes them for you. It's a grape day to be alive. See, the nice thing about using grapes is these placebos, I can put thoughts in. See, that's what you do with the placebo. He puts belief in it. I put a thought in it. See, this one here is the equivalent. What was your favorite drink? That you didn't get violent on. Did you ever drink 20 of them? Were you happy? Cool. Now, close your eyes and remember where you were when that happened. That's right. And we're going to take that idea and make so that any time in the rest of your life, because inside this placebo is a grape idea, that it's not the drinks that got you high, it was your body's response to them. And since you know how to do it, all you need is the magic pill. One grape idea. It starts with a small thing, just one grape idea, and then there are many grape ideas everywhere. And if suddenly you realize that something inside you knows the truth of what I'm saying, you thought you needed the substances to get high. You thought you needed things, you know. You thought you needed that cup of coffee to wake up. Well, I'll tell you, if you couldn't wake up, but if you looked down on the floor and you saw a cobra raising its hood, I'll bet you'd wake right the fuck up, right? So it really wasn't that coffee you needed. It's what's inside your body that can take you into the state where you can really protect yourself. Now, if you could have the good feeling from those drinks and add to it, so something that made it feel way better than that, little serotonin, a little adrenaline, things that go like endomorphine, deluxe, right? Something in the back of your brain that makes Viagra look like a joke. Wouldn't that be a grape idea? Now, see, I didn't tell you guys that I cheat. I look at your pictures, and you can see each other's pictures. You do it all the time. You just don't consciously allow yourself to know. But, gee, don't you think about things, and it turns out you were right? You know, I know women, they go, well, I was sitting there, and I just saw a picture of him over that woman's house, and I went over there, and sure enough, there he was. And I go, so you're psychic? And they go, no, no, I'm not psychic. I'm really pissed off. And I go, well, yeah, but your timing was very coincidental. I know people that just suddenly stop a car and suddenly a kid runs out that none of us could see. And they said, I don't know, I just saw it ahead of time. It's if I had precognition. Or I could say it. You did have precognition. They go, no, I'm not into that stuff. I don't really like to have the experiences that everybody's having and denying. I want to deny them too. I want to be just like everybody else, a stupid idiot, rather than grasping the future. Now, I love the priests. They come by and they go, bless you, my son. So I'm going to come by and I'm going to go, bless you, my son. I want you to go forth in the world. And I want you to take a grape idea with you and go forth and sin. And you just open your mouth, right? And there it is. Whoa, there it goes. That's right. And let it spread inside your body and let it go there. And realize anytime you squeeze this wrist with this hand, you can feel this way. And if you squeeze this wrist with the other hand, you can get that cobra looking at you. If you need to get normal, so just grab a hold of the wrist that you want to squeeze. And no, the other one, son. Squeeze, right? Until you get into that state and you feel that good sensation and the warmth in your chest and all that stuff. And you say to yourself, it's a great day to be alive. Right? And then you begin to hear something like Jimi Hendrix. That always helps me, right? Because it's an anchor. I start going, motorcycles, where are they? I need 25. Otherwise, I can't get the right sound, you know? Now, the problem with this, of course, is that when you go around, is that, well, there's a lot of grapes in the world. Don't you think? Excuse me. And I don't like people to feel left out. That's right. Feel that warmth come down and bless you, my child, because all of those bad things you did, you won't do this time. You're just going to get high as a fucking kite. Anytime you squeeze this wrist, you can go back there. Just like the clock sets things off, why not program yourself so that you can have a really good time when you want to? And when you come out of the state, you'll be so fucked up you won't notice it, but anything that's wrong with you will fall into spontaneous remission. So, you notice, got a little cut in your hand. When you wake up, you'll go, damn, look at that. I healed without knowing about it. Rapid healing, rapid learning. And guess what? Sex will go on 4 times as long, 4 times as intense. And you'll enjoy it, too. Hi. You will not grow up like us. You will be smarter, happier, and more intelligent. And you'll realize personal problems are something you put in other people. When your teachers say to you, well, we got a real problem here, you visualize it going into their chest. And then you say, it's a great day to be alive, isn't it, teacher? Take all of the stress and all of the worry and put it into the grape and say, I brought you a grape. Or you can put it in an apple, because I love that word. I have an apple for an apple. I'm sorry. That's right. It's just I have something in my mouth. Here, apple. Anybody here ready? This is the Jimi Hendrix grape. See, I know a lot about this. All I have to do is think about it and go. I was in London, and the door was broken, and it wouldn't close in this hotel room. They sent up this guy, this engineer, and he looked it all over. He had all these tools and 2 guys with him, right? I mean, this is a hotel that the Queen stays in and stuff. I mean, it's supposed to be perfect. And somebody had a big party, and he looked at this door like that, and he said, well, Dr. Bandler, he said, we can get you another room, put on a new door. He said, or it's a shame you have so much hair. And I said, what? And he was bald, and he went, rubbed the door, and he opened it, pulled it back, and it went, and closed perfectly. And I went, God, I wish I was bald. It's just a matter of context. The psychedelic, delic, grape is just that they are there for oh, there it goes, now it's in him. Oh my God, flashing lights, good feelings, and your stupid beliefs, you forget them and lose them. You wake up in the morning and you go, well, I really have to. What was that? What was I supposed to feel bad about? I worried about that. Oh, I'm too short, am I? My nose is too long. I'm too ugly. Hey, guess what? I'm going down buying an Indian bedspread and calling it clothes. I love that. Me, I walked around with a match going. Psh. Anybody else grow up in the 60s? Don't open your mouth and go, ar, 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 ar. That's it. We shoot seals where I come from. They're on certificates, though. Oh, Lord, Pescalito. Mescalito, teach him a lesson. A very good one. One that will make him happy. Strawberry fields forever. Just a thought. You know the trouble with these? Is they're not like grapes. They're kind of pink on the inside. And you know what? When you look at them, you realize that it's not that easy to put drug experiences, but you can put post-hypnotic suggestions in them like crazy, such that suddenly your skin will de-age, and every time you go to have an orgasm, you'll end up having like four or five. And that's before you touch anybody. And old Bob came here to learn about science, you know, and stuff. Well, guess what? This is exactly what I do with all my clients. And you know what? They have a lot of fun. They get better. They go out and they start making each other feel better. You bet. So tonight, while you sleep, 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 and dream, dream, I want you to be able to just let your mind go a little bit easy somewhere else. Maybe into the hopes and dreams you forgot to remember. And I want you to remember to forget all that stupid stuff that you feel bad about and worse, make other people feel bad about. And I said, my son told me, he said, you were a very strange father. He said, you know, there are a lot of times, you know, my friends and I would do things, and when we'd get caught, you'd go down and yell at the people that caught us. And he said, their fathers would come down and beat them and all that stuff, and you'd beat their fathers. And I said, well, I have a theory. The nice thing is that when you're a teenager, it all seems real important and you do stuff. If you're lucky enough to live through it, when you look back, you're going to go, I really did that? Right? But the thing is that pretty soon you're going to look and you're going to realize you don't have to go through that much trouble. You do not have to drive your car 90 miles an hour on a windy road, drunk as a skunk, right? Blindfolded, racing another car. Right? Me, I used to like to ride a motorcycle between the two of them, even if I didn't know them. And then I like to go up and try and kick the cars over. I never could do that, you know? However, I got a pin in my knees because they didn't tell us, yeah, you get hurt. Well, it ain't the getting hurt. It's trying to get up in the morning 10 years later. It's when the weather changes and you're walking like some old guy and you go, here I am, I'm 50 years old. I never thought I'd make it to 15. Right? So I didn't think I'd have to worry about this thing. I have to take a book and pound it back in. Right? And then, you know, you do things like you go and you look in the mirror and you go, damn, what happened to my hair? Wasn't it on my head? And they go, oh, that was years ago. Right? And then, you know, somebody said, you want to feel younger? Here, let me come on down and I'm going to give you not a hair piece, but a membership to the hair club. You know the polyfuse method? That's where they take polyurethane, that's fiberglass, and they weave to whatever through threads you have left a whole thing that stands on your head and looks perfect forever. You go in once a week and they laminate it, I guess. You can dive in the pool and when you get up, your hair is perfectly combed. Not even a tad of it changes. Now tonight when you sleep, 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 and dream, let your mind wander and remember. There are things that you forgot to have hopes and dreams about. Things not just for yourself, but for the world. And with just a few powerful tools, you can recapture that, amplify it, and with what you know, you can become truly dangerous too. People aren't afraid of me because I have bad motives. It's because if they knew what I knew, they would be dangerous. But if they knew what I knew, they wouldn't do what they do. because they'd realize it's not worth it. I'm the one that when the guy in the bar called me out, drunk as a skunk, arguing with me and Robert Diltz, him and his friend, stood up and they said, I'm with Robert Diltz, and Robert's showing me equations. And the guy goes, all right, fuckhead, what are you two faggots doing? And Robert went, oh, shit, Richard's going to kill him, you know? You know that board-breaking stuff? I do that fucking shit with my head. I did that when I was 7 or 8 years old. I'm not impressed. You want to break something out of 8 or 9 bricks, right? Or better yet, take a small knife. See, my idea of a knife is this big. That's all you need. That's it. I'll take this and fight anybody with a sword because I'll cut them to shit before they even get it out, right? They'll go, what's that, that little thing? I can throw that thing with the chain goes around the neck, and the knife goes right into the forehead, right? I don't have to do it, though, because I pull it out, and I look at them, and when I do, they become very afraid, not because I'm angry, because I breathe at the same rate and go into a wanton state of fear, so they become afraid, and I anchor it and amplify it, and go, boo, and they go, ah, and run away. Hey, you want to get somebody in a state? Go there first. Then what you have to do is to become reasonable, because these guys stood up, and Robert said to one of them, he said, I don't understand. How did you know that you were going to beat us up? And the guy said, well, when we came in here, we looked around and picked out the people we were going to have a fight with. We do this every night. And then Robert said, but how do you choose one person as opposed to another? And the guy goes, well, I don't know. And Robert said, well, stop now. Go back. You're walking into the building, pulled out paper. The next thing you know, Robert's there and said, so then you look at your watch. You check how drunk you are. You go back and you make a picture of the person, and you like, and he's like that. And the other guy goes, what are they doing? And I said, well, Robert's going to find out how you guys are such assholes and go out and make other assholes in the world. I said, you and me, we got a simple solution. You ready? The guy said, yeah. I said, now, outside. And the guy walked over, and I opened the door, and he stepped outside, and I closed it and locked it. Went back and ordered another drink. Pouring rain outside. Big, long building. He has to go all the way around the shopping center, way down around, and come in the front door. And he came in soaking fucking wet, like this, and, you know, shivering like this. He walks in, and he said, you fucking coward. He said, where were you? I went out in the parking lot. And I said, oh, that's where you went. I said, I'm sorry. I looked for you. I couldn't find you. I said, but you're serious about this, aren't you? And he said, outside. He walked over. I opened the door. He stepped outside, closed it, locked it. Only this time I walked over to the front, closed that door, and put a chair behind it. Opened the things and went. He's kicking the door. Bang, bang, like that. Well, the place is owned by a policeman, off-duty policeman, owned this bar. It's part of the retirement fund. And he looked at it and he said, Bandler, he said, are you avoiding another fight? And I said, yeah. And he said, fuck. So he dials the phone and he goes, we got another one out here. He said, I've never seen anybody that can get people to do this so many times. I said, hey, you want to see something cool? And he went, all right, wait a minute. I go and I open the door. I said, go around to the back. Go around to the back. And the guy goes, okay, and he goes walking down. And pretty soon you hear this tapping on the window in the back, pounding like this. I'm freezing out here, please, like that. So I went and I grabbed a bar towel and I opened the door and handed it to him and closed it and went like this. Right? And then it started to hail because I work with the elements. Right? And then suddenly this big wind started blowing and blowing and we heard the hailstones striking down. And I looked out. And there was a car outside there, and this hailstone went bam and broke the window. And I said, Jesus, boy. Nah, couldn't it be him? Has to be somebody else. So I walked over, and he said, should I call a car to pick this guy up? And I said, nah. I said, but where is the police station anyway? It's like 5 blocks down and then to the right. So I opened the window, and I said, quick, out to the road, go 5 blocks down, make a right-hand turn. Do it quickly. Your life depends on it. Lightning is on the way. And sure enough, there it was, right? And, you know, you could tell it had been there already. They just weren't paying attention. They all looked at when he makes lightning. No, I just noticed it. I don't know how people miss it. You know, lightning is coming up, and then suddenly you go, look, there's going to be lightning. Odds are, if there's a whole bunch of it, there'll be more, right? It's getting closer. The storm's coming in. And I see this guy running down the thing, and he pounds on the door, and he goes, does somebody have an umbrella? And I said, anybody got an umbrella? And one of the policemen that's there said, well, I got one in my car. And I said, nah, you shouldn't go out there, you get wet. And I said, sorry, but there's one 5 blocks down, 1 block over. And I said, Robert? And he said, what? And I said, you got this guy's motivation strategy? He said, sure. I said, motivate him to go out and go with his friend and show him where this is. And the guy said, what? And I said, there's a prize for you guys, 5 blocks down, 1 block up. And he went, cool. And he said, is that for doing this with him? And I said, yeah. It's kind of like getting an A, but it's a J. And he went, far out, man. And he went, he opened the door and stepped out and closed the door, locked, by himself. And his friend went, you locked the door, you fucking idiot. And he said, you better come with me. I know where we're going. They went off down the street. And the guy said, well, how come you didn't give him his car keys? I said, he's drunk. You went on driving. Better he walk in there. I said, what I wanted to do is give him a golf club to hold up so to protect him from lightning. Golfers do that all the time. They go, oh, no, lightning. They hold that golf club up and that's all there is to it. That's why there's a lot of golfers that get fried on the course, especially in Florida, by the way, which is lightning all over the place. There's a place called Lightning Alley, and they built a golf course there. And I'll tell you, when it starts to go, there's like 100 to 150 lightning strikes on the golf course every afternoon. And people book it because it's easy to get on the course then. They asked me, they said, do you want to play golf? I said, I'm not even going to go outside. I said, have you guys looked outside? There's lightning bolts all over the place. I had Vietnam flashbacks, right? I mean, you know, there were things going on. And then I realized I had rented a convertible and I had the top down. Somebody said, you better put that up. That car will get ruined. And I said, not me. I paid that $10 for insurance. Because I usually like to wreck them on the way in, you know. And because if you pay the insurance on it, you can do anything you want to that fucking car. Right? Somebody gives you shit on the freeway, bang, hit them, you know. Hold up your insurance form and they'll run away. Oh, no, he paid his insurance. Everybody run. Now, tonight, when you sleep and dream, I want your unconscious to understand things in a new way. You can make it so life is hard and you can feel bad. Or you can start asking the right question. How am I going to have fun? Because if you start enjoying yourself and having fun, these guys went down, they went up the block, and we called, and the policeman opened the door and yelled, in here! Right? And they came in here, and they said, now, you guys look wet. Take off your clothes. Here, put on these jumpsuits. And they went, gee, these look just like the stuff you get in county jail. And they went, that's right. And by the way, here, it's a pair of bracelets for you, too. The guy said, you had a car back there? And he said, yeah. I said, because we want to impound that and take a look through it, you know? And, of course, I know the police well enough to know it doesn't matter whether he had drugs or not. They will when they tow it in. That's easy enough. They have plenty of drugs, you know? To me, that what we need to do is to find ways of being able to translate the brain to the outside to get at the truth. I like that Star Trek thing. We're not far from it. I worked on projects where we were doing this years ago. That movie Brainstorm was based on some people coming in and seeing what we were doing in my laboratory. We were making it so you could visualize images, and we'd go into a gaseous solution where we'd put another gas in and it would harden. You'd make a picture of a coffee cup and make one. I thought that was a cool way to do art. However, the Air Force took it all and said we shouldn't do it anymore. I don't know why, what the Air Force had to do with that, but I don't argue with people who have jets and nuclear weapons and big machine guns and jails. I said, okay, we'll do something else. And they said, and never tell anyone about this. And I went, me? Oh, no, I won't tell everyone about it. They said, you have to keep it a secret. And I said, oh, okay, I'll put it with all my other secrets. You know where I store them? I tell everybody I meet, and then I forget it. So all you have to do is deal with the fact that all these other people on the earth know about it. Now with the internet, I can really have fun. I have a file called Secrets I'm Not Supposed to Tell. And you can't break into it. It breaks into where you are. It roams on its own and finds you when you're trying to make an email. It goes, psst, and pops in and says, hey, let me tell you some really good things. Right? By the way, did you know? Now, I like it. By the way, try Robert Anton Wilson's website. It's absolutely the most fun. And his new book that's a catalog of his favorite conspiracies. We gave a lecture together in London, and at the end we fielded questions. I talked for an hour and a half, he talked for an hour and a half. They had a picture of all the stars in the universe in a huge giant theater, the one where the Beatles played, and you know, and said Albert Hall, and just a lovely evening, and then they had people going around with microphones, and they said, now there's going to be questions, and I told them that was a bad idea, but because, you know, there's people feel obligated to ask questions when they don't have any. They've been in trance for 6 hours, and I go, would you have any questions? And they go, oh, what's a question? That's one, and they go, oh, okay, can I ask a question? You just did. But they gave this guy the microphone, and he stood up, and he said, my question's not for you, Dr. Vandler. And I said, well, I'm glad that's clear. And he said, Dr. Wilson, what's your favorite conspiracy? And he said, well, the Illuminati's been very good to me. I mean, he wrote the book on it, but then he didn't make up the conspiracy. And people are always saying he's a part of it, and he wrote it in a book of fiction. There it comes again. Fiction lasts forever. Science disappears. So if there are truths about you that make you feel bad and limit you, think of them scientifically, and they will disappear in the smoke in the mirrors of the universe, and something totally the opposite will reflect back, which is going to make it so that tomorrow when you wake up, you're going to feel really different, and you won't know why. It's outside, because shit's been going in you and out of you all day long, and the bad things, you're going to leave them behind. You're going to try and feel bad the way you used to, and I want you to do so in vain. And the harder you try to go back and suffer through life like you used to, the sillier it's all going to seem. And suddenly you'll smell a smell and feel a feeling, and you'll go, fuck it, let's have some fun here. Okay, client, I've listened to you whine for 10 years. Enough is enough. So you're depressed? All right. Think of a time that you started to laugh uncontrollably with a friend that was so silly. And everybody looked at you and went, like that. Remember it. Make the picture 40 by 40 feet. You guys have very small ideas in this group. I said, make a big picture, and you guys go. Tomorrow when you come in, you're going to have to close your eyes because your ideas are going to be much bigger than this room. Get that surround sound, that Dolby. Begin to add in voices. All kind of good voices. Don't have your mother and your father and your da-da-da. Get the people. Get Sean Connery in there. He's got a great voice. Peter O'Toole. Great speakers. You should have at least a choir of 1,000 black women. And when you start to do things, they're going to go, no, don't, stop. Turn around. Try it in another way. Listen to Aretha Franklin. She's very convincing. Listen to people whose voice, where is that thing? Is it working? Oh, it's behind me. I said, put it up here so you could see it, and they put it behind me. Can you see through me? Many people can. They go, I see through you, you're a charlatan. And I said, if you see through me, then you're on the other side of the astral plane. I'll meet you there. Mesquitonic University, you need to take that course on, what's the word? Believing. Peter Pan knew all about it. Took one happy thought and you can fly. Hey, you just start with one happy thought and amplify the crap out of it, and you can smile. That's even better. And then that smile is going to leak. Starts with her, drifts over to him. Watch it. I can even make it go places. Watch it. So I'm going to bounce it right back to the room. See, because I learned to do this. Because, see, when you believe in it, you can go like this. Take her feeling, and then I'll just go and match it, amplify it inside myself, and then throw it right back through her. Goes into him. Oops, there it goes. Moving back there. That's right. Fight it a little bit. It amplifies it. Come on, sir. You cannot do it better than that. Come on. There it goes. Whoop, we'll leak it back there. That's right. That's right. Don't feel anything. That's right. Remain unconscious. That way we can all watch and you won't know. That's really good. You're doing that good now. I want your unconscious mind to make sure your conscious mind shows up in your life tomorrow. I'm not saying you don't have a conscious mind, but, you know, the idea of being really conscious, being aware of things around you, the sounds, everything, and not making it so everything bothers you, but so that you can move inside the universe in a way where you can influence it. Try one of these. I keep these behind my ear. Right? It's not real. It's just hypnosis, but it bounces, and when it hits, it does things. Watch this. Woo! You felt that, didn't you? But it's not real. But the timing is awfully good. Right. I can get in, do another one. I keep them. They're up my sleeve. Milton said, there's nothing up my sleeve, but I have things there. Right. And I make them, and I believe in them. Right. And when you do, you can take them and simply throw them around so that when you go home tonight, since you are close enough to hear me, if you get even one little tiny drop of this on you, your dreams will just become magical. Although they may seem bizarre, you'll rest peacefully, and I want you to come back here at 10:15. 10:16. No. 10:16 and 30 seconds. Oops. He says, oh, no, I was just surprised. That's why my head went back. That's okay. And it doesn't bounce. Hey, why did you blink? It bounced off of him. It wasn't supposed to hit you. I'm sorry. Don't feel that good. And it's not spreading now. You know what it does, though? It cleans out all your arteries. Your heart makes you healthy. Because you know what it is? It's the placebo for spontaneous remission, even if you don't know what's wrong. Just remit it, remit it, remit it. Give in. Say to yourself, how good am I going to feel? I don't know if I can take it. I've spent years worrying, and I'm worried now because I may forget. And then say, it's okay, Wilbur. If people can watch a talking mule on TV year in and year out without having any questions about it, I think pretty much anything's possible. So I'd like to wish you and your unconscious a great night. I'll see you tomorrow. I can put some music on. Open the doors, too. You're probably getting tired of sitting out there. That's not entirely true.
Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
Yeah. That's not a woman, but yes, it's a man. Well, then you're going to have a lot of trouble. They're dead. I guess it could be done, but I don't do that sort of thing. Somebody just came up and asked me about that woman, Leslie LeCron. Leslie LeCron is a man, okay, to start with. Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, because Leslie LeCron is also dead. He said he wanted to get in touch with him, and I said I wouldn't be in a hurry to do that. Unfortunately, when I started out, I was pretty young. When I started doing most of this stuff, I was about 20 years old, and I'm one of those people that's not very patient. And I mean, I met Virginia Satir, Milton Erickson, Fritz Perls, a lot of these people. But think about it: Leslie LeCron, dead. Virginia Satir, dead. Milton Erickson, dead. Fritz Perls, dead. Would you want to be modeled by me? I mean, I went to great lengths for a lot of years to meet anybody who is, I mean, people like Gregory Bateson, all the people that were considered by anyone, especially by me, if I read their work, to be in any way, shape, or form of what I considered to be a genius. To me, a lot of people didn't think Virginia was very smart because Virginia didn't have a lot of schooling. I mean, they eventually gave Virginia a doctorate, but Virginia made fun of higher education, and so do I. I may have gone through school until I thought it would never end, but I never actually went there. You know, I was in school because they paid me primarily. I got this big book when I was really young. Can you take just a little bit of that kind of flap back off that? I don't like it when my voice bounces off the back ceiling and comes forward there. That's good. I start to feel like I'm talking on a long-distance phone call from Hawaii. They actually over there still use the transmission lines, so when you talk, you go, hello, and there's a little delay, and then some people go, oh, hi, and just as you think they didn't hear you, you go, hello, so when they're saying hi, you're saying hello. And then they're saying hello again, and then you're talking, and it's always screwed up that way. It's kind of like talking to people who have been to college too long. I mean, I went and I met people who you know, I was told were the most brilliant person on the face of the earth. And as far as I could tell, they were such idiots. It was unbelievable. I sat at a big luncheon with the head of this entire department at Harvard. And the only fun that I had was the three people that were there, they were all considered to be, you know, absolute geniuses, although I could never find out anything they actually did. You know, I tried reading everything there was and stuff, and I kept going, what is this guy famous for? Right? And And when I was sitting there talking to them, they were so lost in their mind, and I was so hungry, that I ate all of everybody's lunch. And every time they'd take their fork, any one of them, and start to go for a piece of food, I'd go, let me ask you a question. And I'd ask them a question, and they'd go, oh, and I'd go, take that piece of meat. And I kind of grew up poor, and I hated to see that food go down a place that wasn't going to be used. I also took their pens, too, by the way. I did that for years. I used to have a drawer with, because I used to I was testing the sensory acuity of people. And then I got picky, and I started only taking Mont Blancs and, you know, some of the better Parker pens, cross pens I would take, none of that big shit, you know. And because I remember one time Gregory Bateson, who is an Englishman, and he's the guy that came up with the double-bind theory of schizophrenia, and he actually started the MRI project where Jay Haley and John Wheatland and Dick Fish and all those people started what eventually became brief therapy. Although what you're doing here is what I call briefer therapy. Brief therapy, I think, at the time was very, very innovative. To say that you were going to do it in 10 sessions or fire the client, I think was number one, good for the clients, for them to know that they had to get this fucking done and over with, or they were out of there. And number two, in order to become a client there, you had to have failed at just about everything else, you know. Most of my clients don't come to me first, in case you didn't figure that one out. If people didn't go, well, I think I'll just fly across the country and I'll go into the middle of nowhere and let this madman do whatever he wants to me. When people came to me, they usually came because they were at the end of their rope. They tried everything. And to listen to them talk was actually kind of funny. And I have to admit, I was not terribly sensitive to them, because they'd go, well, you know, first I went to the psychiatrist for 3 years, and then finally I didn't feel like anything was happening, and so then I started doing Gestalt therapy, and you know, I was in Gestalt therapy, a Gestalt group, for 2 years, and I became very good at expressing my anger, and finally I told this Gestalt therapist to fuck off, you know. And then I went through transactional analysis, and I found out that my parent, my child, and my adult were all fed up. And then I got into a T group, you know, and I went around, and I really got in touch with myself, and I found out I am really sick of having this damn phobia. And so then I went through desensitization, and after 6 months of treatment, the only thing I was desensitized to was the ability to write a check, because I had no money in my account. Mega vitamin treatments. I mean, when I sat and listened to the tale that went on, I mean, I had this one poor woman who'd been in therapy for 16 fucking years with one goddamn problem. Now, I have to admit, it was a big problem. Not for me, for her it was. That anytime someone was late, she would literally have a psychotic episode. I mean, we're talking, you know. Yeah, well, and I said to her, and this seemed like a reasonable statement to me. I, being, you know, the sort of asshole that I am, looked at her and I said, I guess you don't make a lot of appointments. Now, that seems to me to be the first practical thing that a person should do. And she looked at me and said, why? Think about it, right? I went, let's get down in this decision strategy, shall we? Because actually, they did this on film, and yeah, I like that. They got together, the psychiatrists, right? And they decided that it was about time someone discredited me, right? As if I'm not doing a good enough job of that myself. So these, as I'd like to refer to them delicately, bozos, got together, and they had me fly to Marshall University, and they told me, they said, well, you know, we're so impressed with your work, we'd like to get some of this on film. And so they came out, they paid me a fortune, and, they treated me very nice till I got to the studio. As I am walking into the studio, they said, you know, I told them, you know, they said they wanted to make 3 films, and as I'm walking in, the one guy turns around and looks at me with this sardonic look. Looking down the end of his nose, he said, oh, by the way, Dr. Bandler, it was the weekend, so we were only able to get 30-minute tape. Will that be a problem? And I said, gee, just 30 minutes, three clients? What are we going to do with the rest of the tape? Should have seen the look on his face. And he went, well, no, we have three 30-minute tapes. And I said, oh, God, do you have any more clients? And I slammed the door shut and walked in. This studio, the ceiling had to be 15 times higher than this one. I mean, this was a studio for filming, not... And I walked up, and in the way down in the front, because you had stairs like where an audience would be, no one there, walked down in the front, there's a little round stage with two little tiny chairs on it. And then coming out of the walls are these things, these monsters, mechanical monsters, each with a guy riding it with a camera, right? Where they could get up and look straight down at you if they wanted to, and they're out like this. And sitting down in this chair is this lady like this. Like that. And I walked up and I sat down and I said to her, and I said, okay, ma'am. I said, what are you doing here? She looked at me and she said, are you Dr. Vandler? And I said, yeah, today I am. But I said, well, you're here, you know, because, you know, obviously something, because they didn't want me to meet the clients ahead of time. I later found out that she'd been through all of this therapy stuff. 16 years. Think about it. 16 years. And I mean, she told me a little about it. She said, well, I've had this problem for a long time. And I said, are you sure you want to get rid of it? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I said, you want to tell me about it? Give me a hint. It's easier that way. And she said, well, she said, at any time people are late, she said, I seem to have psychotic episodes. She said, it's so nonchalantly, too. And I said, psychotic episodes? She said, well, you know, falling down on the ground, rolling around, screaming, that sort of thing. And I said, that's when I said, well, I guess you don't make a lot of appointments. Now, it seems to me there are certain things that make sense in this world. Now, you have to understand, I found out, by the way, you'll think this is cute, guess who her psychiatrist was? The guy who was at the door. Ooh, does the word revenge pop into your mind? And I said, because the first thing I said to her, as I said, so this psychiatrist that took all of your money, right, didn't help you at all. And she said, well, you know, he did prescribe some drugs, which made it so that I wasn't so frightened, because she said, the worst thing about it is, since I know it's going to happen, I become very afraid. I think about it all the time. And I said, well, you're not going to think about it anymore. And I said, but let's just say that I was going to fill in for you. Say I'm from a temporary agency, I do your problem for a day, and you get a day off from your problems. Wouldn't it be nice if you could have a day off from all your personal problems? And she looked at me and she went, oh, God, that would be wonderful. And I said, good. I said, all right. I said, the only thing is I need a bit of a job description here. I said, because when people are late, I don't even notice. I'm not the most perceptive guy in the world. I said, I spend most of my time trying to find my glasses, and I don't wear glasses. And, you know, even my sunglasses, you know, I look everywhere for them. And when I'm totally fed up, I'll go and sit down and I hear this noise. And I know what that noise is. It's my sunglasses. And I said, so, you know, please let me know. I said, because, I said, what do? I said, you look at your watch and say, gee, you know, so-and-so's late, and then just throw yourself on the floor, right? And she looked at me and she went, of course not. You know, it's so good to get hard to hire help these days. But in one instance, she understood something that I try to teach everybody, which is suddenly now she's not going, oh, I'm a victim. She's going, this is something I know how to do and you don't. Because I look at everything that humans learn as an achievement, right? Now, some of it is not something I would want to achieve. And in fact, this is not something she set out to achieve. Now, she even said to me, she said, it doesn't happen like that. And she said, I like that. She leans forward like, look, you know, if I'm going to hire you, you're going to have to do your damn job right. This is a great format, by the way, for gathering information. She said, the first thing you have to do is you look at your watch and you say, gee, they're a little late, right? So what you do is you start to think about what could happen to them. For example, she said, from being across the street, you see their car turned upside down and them laying outside, bleeding in the street. natural instinct for me, I guess. So I immediately stopped and I said, well, I can do this, ma'am. I kind of want to ask you a question. I said, what do you do for a living? And she said, oh, I'm a nurse in an emergency ward. And I asked her, I said, has anybody ever asked you this? And she said, well, I'm sure I've mentioned it to everyone. And I said, well, it seems to me it kind of fits together somehow. You know, I don't think you have to be like a rocket scientist to see where these two things fit together, right? And because, you know, as I was sitting there later with her afterwards, because I told her to meet me in the hall afterwards and didn't show up. That's called testing your work, you know, and I think it's an important part of everything we do. To me, I test all the time. You know, I mean, they'd have a height phobia. I'm the one hanging them off the side of a building an hour later while they laugh their head off. But she did when we were later on, because I did eventually show up. Actually, I was there watching. But when she was standing around in the hall and she didn't seem to have a psychotic episode, I ran down the hall and I said, excuse me, ma'am. I said, you don't seem to be falling on the ground. And she said, well, I was waiting for you. And I said, oh. And then suddenly she turned around and she said, look, there's my psychiatrist. And that's when I found out who it was. I said, him? I said, you know, he owes you a lot of money. She went running off after him, too, by the way. If you've ever seen the Marshall University tapes, this, by the way, the guy who introduces the tape, talking about how wonderful neurolinguistic programming is and explains what I do, is that psychiatrist. So I wouldn't pay much attention to what he says. he seems to have a little fear of cameras, too. It's like, Dr. Bandler in this tape. You know, it's so natural. But anyway, as she went along, I said, okay, ma'am. I said, now, it's okay. I said, I could make a picture of somebody in an upside-down car from across the street. I said, how do you end up on the floor? I said, I just don't get the connection. And she said, well, what you do is you begin to float closer and closer, and it gets bigger and bigger until you can actually smell everything that's there. You can see the bones sticking through the skin, and you can feel the blood as it squirts with each heartbeat out of the vein and splats on your face. And I started to scream. Because if you do this vividly, this works, you know. I didn't even know the person in the car. But, I mean, to me, this was like the format to be a great director for a fucking blood-slashing movie. I'm sure the guy that makes Friday the 13th movies, you know, he's the kind of guy that when he saw the Marshall University tapes, he's going, I could use this. Because after she told me this, I looked at her and my great therapeutic intervention kind of way. And that's where I look at them like, you bozo. And I said, ma'am, has it ever occurred to you to just, like, not do this? And she stopped and she looked at me and she went, no. She said, I can't help myself. She said, if people aren't there, she said, for some reason, I always think the worst. And I said, well, I tell you what, I want you to try something. I said, now, just imagine, because she had mentioned she had a son. I said, imagine you're sitting there. Your son is late. You start to make one of these horrible pictures. And you know the brightness knob on your TV? I want you to just white it out. Pew! Just like that. Do it 5 times. That's the magic number, by the way. 5. I don't know why. It's the law of 5. So everything comes in 5s. I read Robert Anton Wilson. He explained the law of 5s. After that, I did everything 5 times. And it seems to me that, you know, it doesn't take very long, so why only do it once? So 5 times I had her, and I said, now think of somebody else that you like. Think of them being late. Whack, turn it white. I did it 5 times, and being a scientific study, they had her and the 3 other people that I worked with that day come back 6 months later. And 6 months later, they said, well, you know, after having worked with Dr. Bandler, how did things go? She looked at him, and same psychiatrist, by the way, did the interviews later, and said, fine. And she said, as a matter of fact, I went home that afternoon. Somebody was supposed to meet me at my house. And when they were late, well, I got bored. So I went in, sat on my bed. Everything seemed to go white, and I took a nap. And I liked the interviewer went, really? You could tell he was not pleased. But the second thing I had done that day, because after she didn't take very long, that was 15 minutes, you know, 20 minutes. And then they sent, I like that they sent, the next guy had a phobia of driving. Now, for those of you who don't know, Marshall University is in Huntington, West Virginia. It is not Chicago, okay? Now, if you had a phobia of driving in Chicago, now, his phobia was not of driving a car, but of driving out of town. He couldn't get in a car with somebody else, right? Fine going back and forth, but you started to head towards the outside of town. This guy had such bad psychotic episodes, he'd have to be hospitalized, right? And I had just arrived. It was my first time, I have to admit, of going to Huntington, West Virginia. The most exciting thing in town is in the lobby of the Holiday Inn. And I heard that 50 times between the airport and the Holiday Inn, which, by the way, is only one of two motels in town. And when you go in the lobby, they have a papier-mâché volcano that every 50 minutes has a little red light that goes, and there's a sound effects thing that goes, and then they got four or five papier-mâché Greek statues, I think, you know. But they didn't put genitals on them because it was too controversial, because this is in the Bible Belt. I don't know what Bible they use, but the Bible I have, everybody in it has a dick, you know. I mean, but not them, you know. It was like, they even put clothes on Aphrodite, even though she didn't, you know, excuse me, and they gave her arms, and they were crossed like this. I felt like I was in a Disney, you know, Fellini combined movie. But so I'll tell you, I mean, to me, I think if you couldn't get out of town, because I said to him, I said, because I'd been in town for a couple of days, and I said, you can't get out of Huntington, West Virginia? I said, that must be a real problem. And he said, oh, you don't know. He said, my family, I've been able to take them on vacation. And he said, and I said, well, I said, have you tried every exit? And he said, oh, yeah, I've tried them all. And I said, stop, think about driving out of town. You know one of the ways out of town. And he went, and the beads of sweat started to pour off this guy. And I said, well, hold it there. I said, we don't need to do this. And I said, you know, I said, have you tried to do anything about this? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I, you know, my psychiatrist, you know, he's the one that brought me here. Suddenly I began to notice a pattern. I don't know about you guys. But when it came to not being a help of their clients, this guy that had brought me out here, who was so impressed with my work, it didn't seem like he'd tried it. Because I knew exactly what to do with this guy. I had no doubt that I'd be out of there in 10 fucking minutes, right? And I knew that anybody who had read Frogs into Princes would know what to do with this guy. The guy has a phobia. You take it's steps, right? You have them think about the last time they had it. You have them disassociate so they can see it as a slide. Then you have them see themselves watching themselves in that slide. And you start at the end, and then you run it backwards, right? Then you associate them in, right? We've been doing this for what now, 25 fucking years, right? It's just like that spelling thing. I go to schools everywhere I go, and you know, Colorado's the only state that has it in their textbooks. Says right in their teacher's manual. Okay, teachers, don't give them words until you tell them to make a picture of them, right? California, I live in California, right? And I'm sitting in front of my house the other day. Kids came walking by, and what did they have on the top of their little pile? Their phonetics book. You can't spell phonetics phonetically. Now, I think people who are in the business of teaching should be experts at learning. Funny thing, but it's just a theory I have, right? To me, I don't go. When I found out Jay Haley, Mr. Big Shot, he's the guy that read The Structure of Magic when it was a manuscript, right? And he wrote the publisher back. He didn't realize that I knew the publisher. He's a friend of mine. And Virginia Satir gave him the book and said, publish this or you'll be sorry every day for the rest of your life. And Virginia was totally his idol. And he went, okay, Virginia, but shouldn't I read it? And she said, you wouldn't understand. I really liked Virginia. She could say anything, but she was so nice the way she said it. She could insult the shit out of anybody, and they'd always go, thank you so much, Virginia. They never understood how she hung around with me all the time. When she had time off, she would come and stay at my house, right? And that's because it was the only place that she could go where no one would bother her. She could come there, and she used to sit there and make soup in the kitchen, and, you know, and she could play with all these toys. She didn't even know what the hell they were. And everybody that was there was so busy doing something else, they didn't, you know, they weren't going, oh, please help us, Virginia. Because, you know, she took a week off. The last thing she really wanted to do was sit around and talk about what she did every day for her life. She traveled 350 days out of the year. She went to, you know, she went to Russia before they opened the Iron Curtain. She did things with thousands of people, you know, in Argentina, you know. She had them bring in over 1,000 families, kids, everybody. And she did family therapy in the round with all of these people simultaneously. Now, I'll tell you, I'm good, but I don't do stuff like that. You know, it's like my, you know, to me, I want them in trance, unconscious. Then we'll talk, you know. It's talking to the conscious mind stuff is, you know, that's for the birds. With me, I haven't got the tolerance for that, you know. But, you know, I saw her one time. I stopped off. I heard she was in Houston, and I was doing a thing for the chiropractors down there. They all wanted to know about Moshe Feldenkrais, who's one of the few people I modeled that I really enjoyed, because Moshe was actually a physicist. Freon, the stuff in your refrigerators, if you look on the patent for Freon, his name is there with Marie Curie's son, and that he's the guy that found Freon, and they actually found it by accident. Moshe originally, when he went to Israel, was one of the top physicists that designed their defense systems. And one day he looked around and there were so many people being crippled by terrorist attacks. And he finally said, somebody has to do something about this. We're losing too much talent. And he started doing body work using principles of physics. And to me, I still think, and the work that he's done when he came to the U.S., when I met him, he was doing a presentation in front of 500 doctors. And he took a woman with multiple sclerosis, just crippled, unbelievable. They brought this woman in a wheelchair. They laid her out on a table, and he started working with her. She couldn't move her arms. Her legs were crippled. She could barely talk. And he started working with her and chatting with her at the same time. He told me he did use no verbal techniques. And this guy was one of the best fucking hypnotists I ever heard in my life. He said, what I do with my hands is important, but I say that really is unimportant, so don't listen to it. But I'd heard that before. Milton looked at me the first time I met him and went, I'm tone deaf and color blind. Purple is the only color I can enjoy. Sure, Milton. You have better rhythm and melodic intonation. You know, and I opened up the book I had with me and sat down, and it had nothing but music paper on it. And as he spoke, I sat down and did musical notation, right? And I looked down at this, but as I'm going along, I suddenly hear the phrase, and the pressure of the pencil on the paper. And I stopped and I looked up at him, and he's looking at me like, and he had eyes like an eagle burning holes in my head, you know? And I leaned forward and I said, Milton, I said, because everybody else in the room was like this, you know. Including somebody who wrote a book with me once that doesn't know that. And I leaned over and I said, Milton, I said, I'm a little busy right now. I said, if you want me to go into a deeper trance, just ask me. But I said, right now, I said, I'm doing something. And I said, and let us keep in mind the following thing. You are in a wheelchair. And I am not. All of these people in here are nice people. I am not. And he looked at me and he said, I understand. We got along just fine after that. See, I didn't care if he put me in a trance. I just didn't want him to interfere with my work. I'm very methodical about what I do. But for a guy who is tone deaf, he sure knew how to manipulate those tones in a very methodical kind of way. That the rhythm that he used inside his voice, even if you use different tempos and tonalities, does seem to have an effect on human beings to alter their state of consciousness in such a way that's undeniable. It allows them to relax in such a way that being able to alter their state seems to me to be inevitable. Now, this guy was tone deaf. So when people say don't pay attention to something, I go, ding. Now, Moshe, here's Moshe, and he takes this woman, and he starts to do things which at first didn't make sense, but in a cold second it did. Her legs were actually so crippled. You've seen people with multiple sclerosis, their knees are together and their feet are pointing out, right? He put his two hands between her legs, and he said, push your legs together. Now, I thought, well, they're already doing that. They were going to operate on this woman and cut her tendons. Think about this, by the way. Cut her tendons so that she could relieve the pressure, because when she try and move, her knees were smashed together so much that it was literally wearing through the skin. Now, I don't know about you. When they told me, they said, well, you know, we brought this woman to Moshe because it was our last thing we could think of to try, because we knew we were going to have to operate and cut the tendons to relieve the pressure in her knees. And I thought, what fucking medical school do these guys go to? You know, oh, you're feeling a little pressure in your head, you got a headache? Good, get the drill. We'll drill a hole and let the steam out, you know? But so here's Moshe having the woman press her knees together more. And suddenly I went, ooh, how smart that is, right? Because I had worked with somebody who had broke a stroke. A broke a stroke is in this part of the brain up here. And you can always tell people who have broke a stroke because, number one, they become aphasic. Their language is not the way it normally is. They can understand perfectly, but when they speak, it's like, me, tree, flower, wind. Go to the store, go to the store. And they're always looking at you. The intonation is perfect, but they don't make a bloody piece of sense. So, of course, they assumed people with broken strokes, number one, couldn't understand. But they understand perfectly. It's just that they come in and they look at you and they go, me, you, flower wind. Right? And people go, it unnerves people because just like babies speak in perfect intonation at one point. They look at you and go, batashumo sijo babo. And adults always go, what do you want? What do you want? Bashado foyo bendi. Right? And I had my students at the university. I taught psycholinguistics, and so I thought it should be a really psycho class. So I had, I went through and I had, every day I would go in and teach them the next phase in childhood language development, and I'd have them go out and generate it for the rest of the day. And when we got to, see, the first thing is children make the distinction between consonants and vowels. Ah, ma, ah, ma. They start to make that distinction. The next thing they do is they begin to mutter in well-formed intonation patterns. And what's really interesting is they once they start doing it, they go wild with it. Any of you who've had kids know what I'm talking about. But there's something genetically wired in human beings to try and find out what's going on. So even here, now these kids are all 18, 19 years old, sitting around for the rest of the day, right, going, and they all came back the next day, and I said, well, how did it go? And they all said, it's so weird. When we talk to people, they would go, what's wrong? What do you want? And we'd go, and they said, and they all started to feed us. Every single one of them, potato chips, sandwiches. Isn't that funny? And somebody said, yeah, you know. And when I finally didn't want anything else to eat, they said, then people started to offer us rides. Can I take you someplace? You know, do you need to see a doctor? Anything, you know. What can I do for you? And they said they'd never had realized the human race was as helpful as it was. That by speaking in childhood grammar, suddenly everybody wanted to do something for them. Remember that the next time you can't get help in the store. I tried it at Neiman Marcus. I walked into Neiman Marcus. I guess I don't look like a Neiman Marcus kind of guy. I walked in, and as I walked into the men's department, everybody kind of turned the other way, like this. And I thought, well, I guess these people need some lessons. So I walked up, and I looked at the Versace suits, and I went, and Pretty soon, I had every salesperson on the bottom floor standing around me going, "Can we get you a soda?" "Would you like some potato salad?" One guy said, I've made some sandwiches for myself for lunch. Are you hungry?" And I went, "Want by suit." Hey, you got to do what you got to do. By the way, I've been reading this. Barbara, last night, when I was talking to you, some of the things I did, I guess, kind of fired a key off it there. I actually, this whole workshop here started when Barb was in a workshop I did in Milwaukee, and or as I like to call it, Milwaukee. It's a big town that prides itself on having the biggest brewery around. I remember flying in, getting in the car, and I had rented a car. Not a smart thing to do if you have never been to a city, especially in a horrible rainstorm. I mean, it was raining so hard I could barely see off the front of the car. And suddenly it stopped all at once, and there it was, the biggest beer sign I've ever seen in my life, right? And the directions which I got from the person putting on the workshop failed to mention one thing. Everything on the directions was fine, but they left one out, which can be a problem, because if you don't have that direction, you don't get to everything else on the list, right? You just keep heading off into the middle of fucking nowhere. Right. So I was a little late getting to the hotel. I knew I was kind of on the wrong track when I crossed the state line. So my wife and I kind of got there, and of course my wife, said, "I'm tired, I'm going to bed." And I looked and I said, "Well, me, I'm going to have to start teaching this workshop." So I went down, and I was a little, let's just say, having driven in one of the worst storms I've ever seen, not being able to see where I am, finding out where I was, and wanting to kill someone in particular, I kind of had a lot of energy. So when I walked in, I just kind of powered into this workshop. The poor people there did not know what hit them. I remember for the first hour or two in the morning, they all sat like this. And at one point, I put three stools on the stage, and I looked out in the audience like that, and I went, "You, you, and you, get up here, right? Thank you for volunteering, And they came up, and I said, "Now," I said, "I decided we should do something useful because the world would be a better place if people just looked better. So I picked these people because when I looked out, they looked like, for example, when I looked at Barb, she had two bowling balls on either side of her jaw. Right, and she mentioned to me this morning that I didn't know that she had skin cancer and was supposed to die, terminal. She's supposed to be dead. She's a bad girl. She did not do what the doctors told her to. Another polarity responder. See, I'm like that. People told me, they said, "Well, you're just not college material." I ate up college, and I never even went there. It was so easy. I'd go in the first day, get the books, read them all, give them back to the bookstore, and get my money back. Come back, and I'd go in and I'd say to the professor, "When are the tests? What's the term paper?" They'd tell me. I'd go in the next day, hand them the term paper. Come back at the end of the course, take the final. Sometimes they'd let me take it at the beginning of the course. Then I was off to Mexico. Onto the Harley, and away I'd go. And of course, when I said I wanted to take the final, there's something about me and that little bicycle club that I belong to that made it so professors were highly cooperative, because I'd bring a few of my friends with me. I considered that a negotiating tool, right? And there was one guy who actually, for years, I don't know if I could call him a friend or not, he never spoke, but he was the size, this black guy over here that's been helping me out and getting things for me, he looks like his little baby brother. This guy was also black, and he was the nicest guy I ever met in my life, but he was the scariest looking human being I've ever seen. First time I met him, I walked right up, looked him in the belt buckle, and he reached over and grabbed a hold of the top of my head and lifted me up like this with one hand, right? And he said, "Well, that's a little better view," and my feet just dangled down there. And I thought, put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, "You and I are going to be friends." But his name was Bubba, and Bubba eventually became quite successful. He was the front line of the 49ers for a while. And I'll tell you, the nice thing was is you could watch the football games when people get done, because these guys in the front lines of football teams are big, but they weren't as big as he was. They get down and they always look up, and I'd love to watch the football games because they look up and they go like that. You know, other teams they're on like this, but when they hit him one time, he was just like a rock. You just couldn't move him. And of course, they didn't realize he got that way from doing Aikido, right? It was like, you know, he was not that good at balancing. And when you ride motorcycles, you really should be good at balancing, you know. But I mean, to him, he would get on my, I got on my Harley, I looked like a fly on it. You know, it's like, look, there's something on the seat. Get it off of there, you know. He would sit on it, it would disappear. And I used to like to take him because he would just stand behind me, right? And look at people like this. And if they didn't say the right thing, he'd go like that. And you could hear people's voice crack while they were talking. They'd go, well, I'm sorry, we can't make special arrangements for you, Mr. Bandler, and give you your final now. and they always do this. They go, is he with you? And I'd go, yes, that's my little brother. And they'd go, but, and I go, don't you say anything about it. What my mother does in her own time is her business. Really, really rich people in Los Altos Hills, very wealthy people, right, one time. And I didn't like these people, but they owned the place I worked at for a while and most of the rest of Los Altos. Very rich people, but racist fucking pigs they were. And they didn't get that I was Jewish, right? It's like when I told them it was, this one guy said, well, he said, I don't like to spend money either. I had to be nice to him for political reasons. We were trying to open up this clinic where children could go in and learn what they should have learned in school and not be tortured by adults. And these were abused children, and a lot of them, you know, were involved in juvie and stuff. And so we wanted this guy's money, so we did have to tolerate him somewhat. But he invited me to this cocktail party, and that was too much. I mean, it's one thing to talk to him now and then, but to go to a house full of these people was going to just be more than I could bear. But since I had written a couple of books and stuff, I knew that what I was going to be was a party favor. And I said, well, you know, I'd really feel out of place. You know, I said, I don't really share the same friends as you. And he made the biggest mistake of his life. He said, well, why don't you bring your friends with you?